I'll just introduce myself. Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm Research Officer with South Yorkshire Housing Association. We're a South Yorkshire-based housing association, as our name would imply. We have about 5,000 properties across South Yorkshire. We do a lot of care and supported housing and housing for the elderly, and a lot of homeless properties as well. And we also do ecological development. And if the projector was working, I would have put up a slide of our ecological development at Henley Rise. But I'd quite like to start with a quote, because we've been interviewing the residents that moved into these eco-homes. And this is my very bad South Yorkshire accent, so apologies to everybody. They showed us the boiler, and I was like, that is amazing, that boiler. I've never seen a boiler like that in my life. It was like something out of Star Wars. So, I am the man that brought Star Wars to another part of the world, which is Rotherham. And we're talking about Henley Rise in Rotherham, which is on the outskirts of Rotherham. So we built 23 eco-homes on the outskirts of Rotherham. It was a good place for us to build them, because South Yorkshire Housing was doing a lot of development in that area, and the local council gave us the land for free, so that's really the real reason why we're able to afford to be able to do it. I'll just draw one of our eco-homes, basically. Because our architects are very proud of the picture of the roof of our eco-homes, because our eco-homes have what is termed a complete solar roof from Solar Century. Solar Century, Colin Hines mentioned Jeremy Leggett this morning, who's one of the Green Deal founders. Solar Century is his company, and what they produce is something called the complete solar roof, and it's got solar panels and solar thermal, and you just put it on and it covers the whole roof of the structure. So our 23 properties at Henley Rise are the largest complete solar roof in Europe by some margin at the moment. So if you want to go and see one, Henley Rise is the place to go. Why did we develop the homes at Henley Rise? Well, our architect Craig, who designed them, he said, well, it's not the only way to build homes, but everybody who's building a home will have to find a way to become low carbon very soon, because there's all sorts of legislative and government drivers, and there's a target by 2016 that all homes will be zero carbon, which means that we're going to have to get on and do it, basically. So, our journey to the Henley Rise homes, what we wanted to do was we wanted to target specifically the carbon dioxide emissions coming from the home in use. So it was very much focused on reducing CO2 emissions. This slide here says we wanted to be innovative, but we wanted to be practical, affordable and replicable at the same time. So we can have a debate about whether innovation and being affordable goes together or not. But we did want to try and avoid gimmicks wherever possible. So the first thing that we do when we build a scheme is agree on the types of homes that we're going to put there. So we decided that they were all going to be family homes, because there was a need for family homes in Rotherham. We decided there's going to be 23 of them, that 11 would be for affordable rent, so that's an affordable, and then another 12 we would sell with a fixed equity sale. So we would always own 25% of the property, and the resident would own 75% of the property. And the idea of that is that we keep the price affordable into the future, but we're able to try and introduce some sort of tenure mix into the area. We wanted to use contemporary architecture and introduce the concept of loft living. So if you look at our Henley Rise homes, a lot of them at the top have what seem to be pointless patio doors that open out onto open space, but that's because the living room is actually upstairs and the bedrooms are downstairs. And we also clad it in the current fashion, which is, you know, cedar cladding like that. So the homes have cedar cladding on them, and actually it works quite well, because that big window gives a very good view into open fields and things like that. The next thing we had to do was to choose the technologies to put onto the home. We did look at passive solar design, but one of the things that Craig wanted to achieve with Henley Rise was something that would be replicable quite easily. So he decided, because passive solar depends on the site that you're in, that you wouldn't go down that route. We looked at micro combined heat and power, which is you generate electricity and heat using gas, so it can reduce the carbon emissions from your ordinary boiler, which is producing heat. But we felt that technology wasn't proven. And we also looked at micro wind, so the homes at one point were going to have That's my little wind turbine that we were going to put on at one point, but we couldn't get a building certificate for them because obviously it caused vibration and we might have locked the whole down. We also looked at ground source heat pumps, but we thought we had enough land to put one in, and so again it's replicable, so would we have the space for it? And one thing I do regret is that we didn't put any rainwater harvesting or greywater recycling into the properties because we'd run out of money by that point. But the things we did adopt, I've already told you about our complete solar roof. So there's solar thermal there, and there's PVs. It's a timber frame construction, and timber comes from Scotland. And you can probably tell I'm a little bit Scottish myself, so... And actually, what surprised our architects was that the tiles themselves were quite easy to fit. We used local labour, specifically. We used a local builder to build the properties. And I think the reason, Craig's very, very interested in solar panels, and I did have a few slides with some graphs to explain why he's interested in solar panels. But the main reason is because a large part of the consumption of energy in the home is obviously electricity use, and that's a growing area of use. And one of the things that we wanted for our residents at Henley Rise was that they'd still be able to access information technology at a cheap price. We also looked at some technology-free aspects. So if I could just draw... we gave everybody a free bus pass to see whether it would stop them using their car as much. Unfortunately, the bus stop... There was a bus service when we were planning the homes, which is about 6 years ago. By the time we built them, the bus stop was 15 minutes away, somewhere down there. So that's not quite worked as well as we might have hoped. And we also said that what we would offer to the residents of the homes was some sort of carbon coaching about how to use the technologies and how to reduce their energy use. And what we're hoping is that low fixed income families will save about £500 a year on their energy bills, and because we're doing our bit to help them, they'll begin to think about a greener lifestyle themselves. So what we've been doing is going into the properties and interviewing the residents about their experiences of living in one of these, well, it doesn't look that fabulous, but it is a fabulous eco home, honest.
It's green.
It is green, that's why I want. It'd probably fall down, wouldn't it? It's not exactly airtight or anything. So we've been speaking to the residents. There's a lot of quotes here, but I'll just pick up some choice ones. We did ask them what they thought about the designs of the homes, and thank goodness, because sometimes we go around and ask our residents what they think of the homes we've built, and they say, yeah. But this one, they did feel it was quite aspirational. When people came round, it had a sort of wow factor, and that's because it's quite spacious and quite light. So as soon as you go in, you can see that it's slightly different to what you normally get. Of course, the upside-down living experience isn't to everybody's taste, and what we found is that it's probably not appropriate to put families with young children into an upside-down house because the kids are running up and down the stairs, and there can be quite a lot of noise from the upstairs into the downstairs, even though it is quite an insulated house. We asked them what they thought of the information we gave them, and I think what we found out is that we gave them far too much information, actually. We gave them about 4 folders of information about how everything works and all that sort of thing, and I think the residents began to feel a bit overwhelmed about that. So we're hoping to go back in and do a bit of proper coaching. But the idea is that we've not done it to start with because we wanted to prove that it needs to be done so that we can get money to do it, basically. One person so far has said that they felt better off living in the home. But that's not the real thing. What people actually say is there's an idea that, changing people's behaviour, the government has to do something, business has to do something, the public has to do something. And with Henley Rise, it's kind of like that. Because what a lot of the residents said was, well, yeah, I am beginning to change my lifestyle a little bit because, well, if you're doing something and you've given us this home that's really good, we should start to do something ourselves. And what's interesting is that because 11 of the homes are just affordable rented homes, those people didn't really have that much of a choice about moving into them. So they're not eco-aspirational households in any way. in just ordinary households have ended up there and began to change their lifestyle a little bit. I'll just pick up. I don't know if there's any good quotes actually. Well, it was just like a double standard, really. If you live in an eco-friendly house, you've really got to toe the line, haven't you? Otherwise, there's no point living in an eco-friendly house. You've been offered an opportunity, so there's no point taking the mickey. I said to myself, they're providing things, they're trying, so you try. I'm not sounding like a goody two-shoes, because I wouldn't have done it before. And they've also been round. One family went to Currys and said, we've moved into an eco house, and Curry said, oh, we can sell you A-rated appliances and give you all sorts of advice. One family got very, very involved with the solar panels. I don't know if anybody knows about selling energy back to the grid in the ROCKS system. We were wanting to support people to get money through ROCKS with Empower, and that's proven to be a very, very, very trying process. And because the resident has to be able to choose the energy supplier by law, we can't really help them with the process. So if there's one thing, change that process, government. Do something about that. One person has begun not to shower in the morning, but to shower in the evening, because they realised that the solar thermal panel was heating up the water enough, and if they had a shower in the evening, they were saving more money. We did ask people about, do you think you could go even further, perhaps? Take the plunge into even more eco-friendly living? And that's the point where people start saying, well, you know, the buses are bad, the roads are bad, we don't get enough recycling. Everybody wants to do their bit, but buses aren't up to scratch and they're not making it attractive enough for people to use it. And so there was a lot of complaints about the bus service, and I think that's because we'd handed them the travel card, but they couldn't use them. We also went to talk to other residents in the area, because we've plumped these eco-homes here, and we wanted to know what they thought about it. And I think this is an area where we were missing a trick, really, because there is a school just down the road, and we really should have been involved with the community from the start. Because the people were saying, well, I think they're eco-friendly, or something like that. One person said, well, it's like Switzerland's come to Henley Rise, or is it New England? Okay. We asked them, what sort of benefits do you think people would get from an eco-home? Somebody said, something to do with the roof. Something's going on with the roof. I think it's something to do with the environment. One person said, well, you should have spent the money on our homes. Okay. What sort of things were people considering in the area? Quite a low-income area. So one of the major things people were considering was buying things second-hand. Rotherham had just started collecting the bins fortnightly, so recycling was going up the agenda in Rotherham at the time, so a lot of people mentioned that. One person said, well, I use public transport, but I only use public transport if my mum's not driving. Okay. We asked the people who live in the houses if they wanted advice. Well, they were a bit dubious, but open to offer. Before Nick comes on, I just wanted to... There's one person gave me a quote, and I've written a sustainable development strategy for where I work, and one thing the finance director always says to me is, you know, well, we've got to think about value for money in the tenants, and they're not interested in sustainable development and things like that. So when this man, unprompted, said this to me, I could have leapt up and kissed him in the mouth, which would have been interesting, rather. You can't just be selfish and think it's just there for us. It's for generations after us, and generation after that, and generation after that, and so on. Everybody becomes greedy, and there's no pieces of cake left for anybody else. But there's a lot left out there, and there's a lot of things that people can do, and it has to start pretty much now, which was an unprompted quote from somebody moving into an eco house. But think does prove that providing people with good quality homes can begin to change their actions.
Thank you very much.
I meant to say at the beginning was do butt in with questions as we go along. So if anyone's got any questions for Andrew, then you get less of me rabbiting on.
Just one, you mentioned a target of saving families £500 a year.
Yeah.
Have you monitored that?
That has been monitored as we speak, and I was hoping that the report would be finished by now, but Sheffield Hallam University have all sorts of equipment up monitoring the energy use and things like that, and by the end of March we should have a report that shows whether it's worked in practice.
How much have we got to build?
£131,000 per unit.
And how much does that compare to?
It's about £30,000 more.
How much is the roof?
The roof itself is the major cost. That's about 15,000. It's because it's easier just to fit it straight away. Whereas just actually the roof, they're quite
that makes the solar panels make the roof covering it. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
it's
slightly different.
Is
there any had you thought, or were you thinking in the future about this model, but using more of a co-housing model? Because I'm thinking that, you know, one way of energy saving is actually people sharing a lot of facilities, like all green computers.
The problem with that is that it's just the current funding structure. We have done co-housing in the past. If you go to St. Elizabeth's Close in Ely, that was one of our architects' developments, and that was in the 1980s when it was more popular to do that. I'm sure we would consider it in the future, though, because the architects do have expertise in that.
How much insulation is there in the fabric of the building, roof, walls, floor, and what?
Very good question. It's the sort of Kingspan type modular insulation. I'd have to get back to you with how thick it is and things like that.
Do you know how efficient it is overall?
Well, I mean, we're testing that at the moment. But I mean, the aim of it was that it would be in the equivalent of zero carbon for the whole year.
Zero carbon, so we're talking about that's passive house standard.
It's not a passive house though, but I think it's because of the amount of solar panels on it.
If I can just butt in there, you probably know this already. Zero carbon is basically displacing with renewables what you're emitting through heating and so on. So it certainly helps to get passive house, to get down to zero heat standard first, and then all you have to displace is your lights and appliances use. You can have zero carbon and be quite profligate. You could have quite a leaky structure and just have a garden full of renewables, you know. You are working
We're quite well insulated, so we're not passive house standard. We've probably got more renewables. I think that's probably Craig loves solar panels, who's our architect.
Thanks very much, Andrew.
Okay, it's really, really, really sad that the laptop and the IT has gone wrong, because my presentation was all ready to give to you on the laptop. I'm Nick Parsons from South Yorkshire Energy Centre. Probably any of you who've seen me before will know that my presentations involve jumping around and waving my arms rather than sound and light extravaganzas, so you'll have to make do. My background's in social housing as well. I worked for Housing Association for about 20 years, and way back before it was fashionable, we were doing very highly insulated refurbishments, 100-year-old houses, which we, when we handed them over, when we finished the building works, were performing better than something that came off a volume house builder's shelf. Andrew and I have really planned this for weeks in advance. We had an email earlier this week saying, I'm thinking of doing this and I'm thinking of doing that, and we spoke for about a minute just before you came in. So basically what we said, Andrew's organisation, South Yorkshire, has got some plans for greening up refurbishment, although they've done quite a bit on green refurbishment in the past, as has the one I worked for. But what I thought I'd do is throw a bit of a provocative spanner in the works and talk about what we really need to do for the future. It's absolutely fine that we can talk about new build and really, really high standard new build. If I stand there, I can get any C projected on me. We can talk about really high standard new build and everything wants to be zero carbon by 2016, or that started after 2016, or indeed if it's social housing, started after 2013. The sceptics among us might wonder quite how much zero carbon is going to be watered down before we get there, when the builders start discovering that using their normal methods they can't build to that. But, you know, it's an aspirational target. Let's really hope that we do get there. But we've got bucket loads of existing houses, and we need to do something with those. My background is particularly in the 70s and 80s, I was really, really ranting, as I tend to, about the fact that lots of decent houses were still getting knocked down, despite housing action areas and general improvement areas. Lots of decent houses were being knocked down. One of the things I really enjoyed about working for a primarily refurbishment housing association was we regarded ourselves as a kind of improver of last resort. The houses which were sort of seriously, you might get a seriously knackered house in the middle of a terrace. In the past, quite possibly a chunk would have been taken out of that terrace. A couple of gable walls built up, so you had two sub-terraces and an infill plot. And we were saying, like, well, we're getting government funding, we're in the happy position where we can actually spend an amount of money that Joe Public probably couldn't spend to bring that house up to a decent standard, retain the whole terrace, meaning that not just the Duff house we were buying didn't have to be knocked down, but the ones either side didn't have to be knocked down. So, you know, we thought this was a good thing. And then we started looking at the fact that people couldn't afford to live in the houses we were doing up, because two gas fires and a coat of magnolia paint is not the best thermal treatment you can give to a house. So we started really, it happened to coincide with an increase in the cost limit, so we were able to put more money into sort of pushing and insulating, internally insulating the external walls so that they performed far, far better. Wasn't necessarily environmentally friendly. In those days, the insulation we used was blown with CFCs. At that time, we wouldn't have known a CFC if it leapt up and bit us. But, you know, there's a little bit of the hole in the ozone layer with my name on it, you know, which is embarrassing. But you've got to do the best you can at the time. So, future strategy. What are we going to do? Any amount of me insulating my house internally, because I don't want to change its outside appearance, you insulating your house internally, because you don't want to change its outside appearance, is probably not going to do what we really need to do. I'm becoming a strong believer in thermal enveloping. Do people remember the enveloping schemes in Sheffield, in Tinsley, in Darnell, in St Barnabas? Basically, in the 1980s, it was a way of getting improvement area money to do more, because otherwise you had to rely on people applying for grants and saying, I'd like a grant, three doors up, I'd like a grant, five doors up, I'd like a grant, and the ones in the middle were all looking rubbish. So it was rechanneling that money into saying, right, we're going to do up six streets and we're going to put scaffolding up from one end to the other, we're going to repoint all the houses, we're going to put new windows in all the houses, single glazed at that time, but never mind. We're going to put new roofs on and we're going to tart up front gardens and so on. So we generally improve the appearance of the buildings and having done that external work, we give them, we don't do the insides, but we give them a really good envelope. We make sure that they're weather tight and in good order for the next umpty dump years. And certainly the ones, I've been doing some work in Tinsley at the moment, I remember the Tinsley enveloping nearly 25 years ago, and they're looking pretty good. Some of the softwood single glazed windows are looking a bit tired, but you know, they've kept in pretty good order. So, what I think we need to be doing now is to employ that the same sort of approach, but thermally. So basically, we want to be looking at externally insulating whole terraces of houses. Now, what's that going to do? If you live in a nice stone terrace, okay, I bet you like it because it's got a nice stone frontage. My plan would have it blasted across with a nice rendered frontage. Well, there's going to be a lot of unpopularity about that. Maybe you feel less kindly disposed towards your brick built terrace and wouldn't mind if that had a nice rendered frontage. But basically what you're looking at is getting a great fat wadge of insulation behind some sort of rain screen. Is everyone au fait with the Netherthorpe tower blocks behind the Arts Tower? What colour did they used to be? Sort of dull and brownish. And now they're white and blue and some of them brown and magnolia and whatever. That's not so they look pretty. That is a rain screen behind which sits a great fat wadge of insulation.
So basically the opportunity, they needed to improve the thermal performance. They have to have something on the outside, and in those particular circumstances, I'm not sure whether it's steel or aluminium, but it's a powder-coated, effectively permanently painted rain screen. And personally, if somebody came and coated the outside of my house in brightly coloured metal panels and put 4, 6, 8, 10 inches of insulation on the outside, I'd say thank you very much indeed. But it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. But I think these are the sort of thoughts we've got to think. You know, thinking the unthinkable. Isn't that what gets government ministers sacked? So I'm not sure what will happen to me. But we've got to think those sort of thoughts. Otherwise, I think potentially we're actually turning the clock back to the 60s and 70s and maybe going to be thinking, well, are there certain houses which we actually demolish? Are there some houses which are so thermally inefficient and so difficult to do thermal improvement works to? Are there some houses which actually, in our flight towards not zero carbon, you're going to find it really hard to get zero carbon with existing houses, but in our steps towards low carbon housing, are we going to find that there are some houses which maybe we say are beyond the pale? It's just a thought and something which I want you to mull over the next 15 or 20 years while you think, oh, Nick was wrong. But there are things which are going to help towards that. Albeit that it hasn't been the smoothest inception, the energy performance certificates for houses. Yes, you know, when you sell, you have to get your certificate and show that your house scores a G or something. People are going to start, as we are helped in our push towards low carbon housing by rising energy bills, nothing like them for focusing the mind. We're helped by that, and people are going to start saying, well, actually, I really, really like this house in this particular location, but it's going to cost me an absolute fortune to get it up to reasonable levels of energy efficiency. And I think that will start tweaking the market. You know, it will get to a point where you say, right, it's going to cost me $40,000 to do thermal works on this to get it to the sort of standards it needs to be. You want $200,000. I accept I can't get the whole $40,000 off, but I'll offer you $180,000. Right, done, because I can't get rid of it, because all these other energy conscious people won't buy it either. So it's just really having a think about what the future is. And I think any amount of piecemeal, me doing my house at the end of the terrace, you doing your house in the middle of the terrace, somebody else doing one in the next terrace along, is not going to help us on a strategic path towards low-carbon existing housing. I think we have to get some sort of combined approach, apart from anything. We want to nail everyone down to, want to get a decent job, but nail everyone down to as cheap a price as possible. How do you nail someone down to a cheap price? You tell a scaffolding firm that we don't want scaffolding for one house, we want it for 148 houses. We don't want external insulation, which if you buy it for one house, you probably think was gold-plated by the price. We don't want it for one house, we want it for 148 houses. We have attic bedrooms, which are really difficult to insulate round because where's the classic picture? Oh, let's steal Andrew's. There's your attic bedroom, yeah? So it's easy enough to do this bit. It's easy enough to do that bit if you want to. It's a real pig to do that bit. So all your heat goes up and out those sloping ceilings. Well, what if you took the whole terrace and you put a warm roof on? You stripped off the roof, you put the insulation on over the rafters. It can be done. It's a perfectly well-known building technique. You put the insulation on and it's fixed through to the rafters, and then the roof is laid on that. So no farting about inside. All the cold bridging, when you've got a... You insulate internally, you do your living room, you do your bedroom, or you do your bedroom, you do your living room if it's upside down. And what happens here? you've got a cold bridge, unless you're lifting every floorboard and putting a little bit of insulation in between. And even then, your joists are bridging, so that you've got a poorer insulation value. If you do the outside, whoopee, complete reduction, or not complete reduction, a massive reduction in cold bridges. Okay? Still doesn't necessarily deal with the floors, so you have to get dirty inside and scrubble around under your floors, but this could be done. You imagine that being done on a whole terrace. It will help air tightness as well, because if you're doing the roof, you're doing the walls, you've got to deal properly with the gaps. If you look up under my gutters, apart from the fact that brickwork on 100-year-old houses is generally held by gravity, not by cement, so you get up near the gutters, and I can just lift the top two or three courses off my house. That means some of them have sort of drooped in slightly. So to say my attic was slightly overventilated would be putting it mildly. So you can deal with those sorts of things. You can get to better standards of airtightness. And now I'm going to shut up and go over to Andrew, who has minus 2 minutes to talk about what South Yorkshire are doing with.
All right, well. We did have a picture of we love it because our external would be cedar cladding, of course, because that's what our architects love at the moment.
I work in areas where people like to set fire to things, so,
so do we, but bit of warmth. Right, so I asked our architects just to give me some idea of how much it would cost to do a refurbishment of a house. I thought you might be quite interested in that. So they started off, they said, well, what do you want? I said, well, give me an unimproved property. So they said, okay, so that means it has a standard assessment SAP rating of 32. So the higher the SAP rating, the more the better it is. And an energy performance certificate band of F, and that means its total CO2 emissions for the year is 7.2 tonnes. And that's your standard 1930s two-bedroom council house. They said, well, we think a typical owner-occupied property, which has a SAP rating of 55, so a bit better, that gives it an energy performance certificate rating of band D with total CO2 emissions of 4.4 tonnes. So we get between the two. They said, well, what do you want us to do to this house? I said, well, we'll make it like sort of one of the new houses people build that looks like that. They said, well, that'll give you a SAP rating of 82, an energy performance certificate band B, and total CO2 emissions per year of 1.7 tonnes. And they said, well, to go from 7.2 tonnes down to that, we reckon that would cost us £26,000 to get there. And that's doing things like insulation, draft proofing.
Is that based on a terrace, did you say? A two-bedroom?
A two-bedroom, and sort of a semi-detached council house,
oh,
1930s. I said, oh, can you do any better than that? Because we build up to what's called for Sustainable Homes Level 3, which gives you a further 25% reduction in the CO2 emissions from the home. I said, could you get a house there? And Craig said, that's the perfect opportunity to put some solar panels on the roof of the house. And I said, excellent, Craig, put some solar panels on the roof of our imaginary house. And he said, oh, yes, that gets us the 25% saving. What he called a modest solar panel would save you half a tonne of CO2, so that gets us down to 1.2 tonnes of CO2 for an extra £7,000. So that's the sort of thing we'd be looking at doing to houses. And because our stock, and Nick was pointing out, he wants to do whole terraces and rows and things like that, because a lot of our stock is pepper-potted around, we'd probably do it on an individual scale first. So that's costs for doing one property by itself.
If I could just butt in there, the one big issue. If you've got scaffolding along the whole street, there's going to be a lot of inconvenience to everybody. It's damn sight less inconvenience than ripping the plaster off every wall and taking the radiators off every wall and the sockets and whatever. Doing it internally means, unless you're a hardy mortal, effectively means you've got to move out.
Yeah.
Doing it externally means it might be a pain in the bum for a few months, but you can stay in.
Yeah.
That's the really, really big difference.
So then I said to them, and then I thought, well, that's good, we could do that. Where are we going to get the money from? So I've begun to start to look for sources of funding, because I know that today we're supposed to be proposing to the council what they can do for Sheffield. And I know one of the things the councillor was going to say, we don't have any money to do that. So I thought, well, let's help them a little bit. I'm going to suggest some forms of money that we could access to do up the houses in Sheffield to a very high carbon reduction standard. So, first of all, there is European money available from the ERDF fund. It's a little known fact that's now available to do refurbishment for low-income households. You didn't used to be able to do that, but you can now. There's also a fund called Intelligent Energy Europe, which is a fund where a group of housing associations from different European countries that want to get together and do experimental things around the EU can all get together and apply for funding, as long as they promise to learn from each other, which should be an interesting experience. There's the Low Carbon Buildings Programme, because we love solar panels, we can get funding from that to put solar panels on roofs and things like that. Never discount the desperation of a government agency. The Homes and Communities Agency has £8 billion to spend over the next 3 years. Because house building slowed down so much, they're having great difficulty spending it. So I think Sheffield should go to the Homes and Communities Agency and say, we could spend £8 billion in England over the next 3 years. And they're very desperate to keep that money and spend it on housing, because otherwise they'll be taken off and given somewhere else. Also, at the moment, the government is consulting on the Community Energy Saving Partnership, and the consultation is open until May, and that's going to pilot some sort of project like Nick's talk about, actually, where you do groups of properties and areas and their work on that. So that's where we're looking for money.
Can I just make one other suggestion? Andrew's talking particularly about social housing, but at the moment, if we're talking about individual houses, what's the rate of interest at the moment? It's not awfully good, is it, if we were to salt our money away? It's actually getting to the point where it's probably better to put it under the mattress than to put it in the bank. But what about investing your money in something which is going to give you a fantastic rate of return, given today's interest rates? Start banging it into insulation in your house, which is going to immediately, as soon as you finish, unless you finish in the middle of summer, as soon as you finish doing the insulation, is going to reduce your energy bills. You can actually, it actually makes it really sensible for you to borrow against improvements to your house. Just as a thought.
Have you gone for planning permission with that?
you have to ask for it. Basically, it will vary depending on where you are. If you're in a conservation area and you've managed already to swallow your pride and lose your stone facade behind render, then you might well get told, no, go away. I hope that moves towards complete changes in the visual face of houses will be taken on board by all aspects of local and national government, so that we're not going to have the energy obsessives saying, oh, that's a fantastic idea, and the planners saying, yeah, it's a fantastic idea, but you can't change the appearance. So I suspect that in general it's not necessarily going to be a major problem. On a wholesale basis, apart from anything, wouldn't it look really, really stupid if you had the end terrace? And bearing in mind, if you go for the sort of U values, the sort of insulation values that I want you to go for, which is well in advance of building regulations, you're probably going to be putting 4 or 6 inches of material on the outside of your house. Okay, wouldn't it look stupid if you did your end one and then your neighbour didn't and then the next one did? It'd look a bit like Lego. On the other hand, that may look quite nice. But, you know, it could be a bit of a problem. But if you do it on a wholesale basis, I think it's going to be less of an issue. There's one other issue. I like this one because we fell foul of it many years ago. We did external insulation on a house in the north of Sheffield. End terrace seemed like a good idea. Wrapped the whole end in insulation, and it was only 2 inches at that time, so it didn't look too stupid where it returned onto the next house. And the council came along and said, what about the fact that you're encroaching on our highway? Because it was a straight onto the pavement house.
And effectively, although it was hanging in the air above the pavement, we had nicked 2 inches of their pavement. Luckily, they chose not to take it any further. But, you know, those are little minor issues that we've got to get around as well.
Are we getting to a general...
Yes.
I
basically agree with, pretty much everything Nick's been saying. Now, I think we probably need to go through the thicker insulation. I think North Sea gas is expected to run out in about 10 years' time. I mean, I think it is really important that we look at working out how we can insulate the existing housing stock to the extent that the buildings are survivable in without heating, or with just having the odd, burning the odd bit of wood, because that's the reality in which we could well be facing within not that many years' time due to kind of peak oil, peak gas situations. In the mid-80s, when I was at architecture school, up at the top of the Arts Tower, we had lectures where we were discussing this, and it was clear back then that external insulation of all of the existing housing stock was going to be the only way forward in the mid-80s. And, over 20 years later, and it's not been done, it's clearly of utmost urgency now. And I mean, I would have thought we should be looking at the equivalent of kind of 300 mil of rock wool externally, but obviously that'd be a foot of insulation if it's something like rock wool, if you want to make the houses as good as we can. Something else I was at, a Transition Cities conference, one idea was that the Sustainable Communities Act could be used for stuff, and the issue of kind of building out over the footpaths, I think, is something that we could raise by using the Sustainable Communities Act to try and get a change in the law whereby you can, add a foot to the next front side of your house and go out over the pavement. And the other thing I was going to say is what I'm really interested in doing is getting together with people and working out how we can actually make this happen, like now in Sheffield, and actually start this really happening, because we need to do it really urgently. I mean, there's the energy crisis is currently being masked by the economic collapse. I think the demand for energy is at the moment collapsing quicker than the production is collapsing. But at some point, these two are going to catch up, and then the crisis is going to get considerably worse than it is now. This is still just the beginning of the crisis.
We do need a bit of political will in there. I accept your point that ideally we want something that's as near as damn it zero heat. I think we do have to colour that a little bit with where the building industry's at the moment. I mean, there are some passive house, which is still not quite zero heat, but near zero heat refurbishment schemes in Germany, but not many of them. And I think if you consider, for example, that the current building regs for new build require a standard of airtightness, which is better than it was a couple of years ago, but 10 times worse than a passive house built in Germany today, getting the building industry to grips with airtightness requirements is a significant process. I think we might have to accept that we can get very low carbon or very, very low heat requirement. Whether we can get to zero heat, I think we've got to start with something.
John, you had a question. I'm glad you had it first.
Can I pick up on what Nick said a moment ago and what Chris said? I mean, it's not so much about the building and the architectural thing, which I don't know much about, but more actually the making this happen issue. I mean, just doing some rough sums, following on from what Andrew said, to get the whole Sheffield housing stock efficient might cost, I estimate, somewhere between £5 and £10 billion. Now, that may sound a hell of a lot of money, but if you think of the offsetting of that in terms of both energy use, unemployment, because, a whole lot of these builders are probably, I'm afraid, going to be unemployed for quite a few years to come, given the current economic situation, Comparing, of course, with the amount of money that's been thrown at the financial crisis over the last 6 months, and probably more come again, what I'm really leading up to saying is actually the equation doesn't look anything like as odd now as it might have looked 2 years ago, say. So I'd be very interested in following on from what Chris said about how can a group of people actually make this happen. I mean, I personally believe it's got to happen through the kind of, you know, the political environment, you know, capital P political environment. But I'm not saying there isn't scope for sort of campaign groups, pressure groups, things like that as well. But personally, I argue that we ought to be putting serious pressure on both the council, Sheffield Council, and on central government.
It needs to be on central government as well, because it ain't just Sheffield that needs this. You know, we need to, I mean, obviously it's got to be on both, but we need to get central government will. I mean, you know, there's been lots of really good papers done about ecological refurbishment and so on, but it needs to get beyond paper, it needs to get the bricks.
Well, the government's currently consulting on their, what is it, the HE something strategy, home, what's it called? It's an energy consultation which has gone on to me as well, and in that they've said they aim to have every home done the whole household approach, which means they do everything that they deem to be a value for money. They want to have treated every house in the country by 2030. So if you want to respond to that consultation and say maybe 2030 is a bit late, then that would be quite good.
The other side of things, you talk about treating every house. Well, at the moment, I mean, I'd love to have a cavity wall house because I wouldn't have to spend loads of money insulating my solid walls. I could just get someone along to bank some cheap or even free insulation into my 2-inch cavity. But that would give me an insulation value which wouldn't meet the current building regulations for a solid wall house. Ironically, if you trip in building regulations, you actually have to get a better standard of insulation for a solid wall house than you do for a cavity wall one, because they accept that a cavity wall house has a cavity and you can only put that much fill in it. But we're talking about things way in excess of that, you know, three times as good as that.
Heather, two kind of technical ones and then a policy one. I'm a bit confused now about costing. And Andrew, in your summary, you've got about £8,000 to retrofit the house.
That's going beyond building regulations up to another 25% saving.
So, did I hear you right when you said in your presentation it's £26,000?
To go from a home that was emitting 7.7 tonnes. Yes. Down to 1.7
thousand. Right, so, I didn't hear anybody else to take an in-breath. Is what I heard.
Yeah, but most owner occupied up.
A two-bedroom solid wall house.
Yeah.
That was one of the questions.
And we both saw that occupied houses aren't up at 7.7, they're about £5 because the boilers have been improved and things like that.
That's one question. The other question, because I'm in a group of people in the street who are interested in the group, some are private, some have association. And one thing that we have going around now is one thing is a draft grouping first. And it sounds like it's very easy, doesn't it? Yeah, we all know about draft grouping first, but finally it's not that easy. So I'd really be interested in both of your opinions on if we're going to do a massive policy, you know, talking about external travel, which makes a lot of sense, but what is the what the skills required to do the draft
grouping? If you were doing external...
And the cost.
Yeah, if you do... the cost is really, really hard to say, because the cost starts plummeting when you do more than, you know, 5 or 10 of them sort of thing. But if you properly detail external insulation, then you can deal with an awful lot of the draft issues as well. Because there's an awful lot of air ingress into houses. We need ventilation... Intentional ventilation, good, so that we don't die when we fire up our log stove and this sort of thing. Unintentional ventilation is a draft. That's the thing we don't want. And basically, if you do a proper job with external insulation, generally, insulation is not an answer to draft proofing. People insulate underneath the living room floors and then say, oh, but my feet are still cold. Yeah, but you didn't seal the gaps around the outside, around the skirting boards, did you? Aha! But if you do insulation on adhesive, on a bed of adhesive, it can actually start to deal with a lot of the
unwanted ventilation. You get really weird air paths in buildings. Even solid wall buildings do have a little gap between the bricks. So the little bit that you didn't point up properly around your waste pipe when you changed the position of the bath, the air gets in there. Do a thermographic image. You might actually have an air path which goes off up that wall, over here, and up in that corner, and ends up in your attic. And because the attic's well ventilated as well, you actually have a passive stack effect. So you're pulling cooling air through your wall. Yeah? But if you're doing a really good job with the external insulation, and you're maybe putting a warm roof on so that your insulation in the roof meets the insulation in the walls, and it's really done properly, and all the joints are cut properly, and they're glued properly. There's a hell of a lot of assumptions. But if it's all done properly, then you can help the air tightness a great deal. And then you seal properly around all the openings and everything. One way people find of sealing properly around openings and getting really good standards of draft stripping on a real serious volume basis is by using UPVC. I'll throw that one into the when.
One of the biggest barriers you find when you're trying to put a project together.
Sorry?
One of the biggest barriers, the biggest problems you have when you're trying to put a project together in the beginning?
Nobody's got any money to do it. To me, that's the biggest problem. The technical, I mean, there are problems along the way. There are problems of perception, problems of individual views. Individual architects will have different ideas of how to detail the building, how to detail insulation. Individual builders will have different views about how to do it, how much to do, how important it is to be so really desperately obsessive that, you know, there's an eighth of an inch gap there, or we have to cut that piece out and put another one in. You know, views will differ, but there's technically absolutely nothing stopping us. Yes, we've got to get planning permission. Yes, we've various issues we need to address.
Is planning permission less of a barrier than some of... Because, I mean, I'd have thought with some of them that would be the biggest barrier to overcome initially, assuming you've got your money, of course.
An example I often use, which is nothing to do with insulation, I hasten to add. Does anyone know J. James Cycles on Bramall Lane?
Yeah.
Okay. What's it covered with a lot of the way?
Grey paint and steel sheet.
Crinkly tin, yeah. Now, that was a way of getting some of the knackered houses on Bramall Lane, which weren't demolished at the time the rest of them were, back into use quickly. But A, I think it looks really quite good. And B, I don't think the planners had any major issue with it. Mm-hmm.
Is that because it was the sort of building where it was? It had been kind of in the middle of Thornwood in that kind of slab.
I think they may have done. We're going to have to test the water.
Right.
Could I add another barrier? Differences in tenure, owner-occupiers, private landlords, housing association, properties, council properties. Mm-hmm. I think you just get around that somehow. Because we'll all be accessing, I mean, it's back to money again, really, I suppose. We'll all accessing funding from different places. I mean, I live in a private landlord property, so what's the incentive for me to do any insulation and things like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that comes back to what Nick was saying about the underwriting scheme. The underwriting scheme dealt with all the houses in the street. I mean, some people...
Yeah, but you still have to get everybody to sign up, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and there was the odd family that opted out, but it was generally such a good deal that everyone...
So you have to make it a good deal, so it's back to...
Yeah, it's back to funding. Yeah.
No, on that funding question, you did, when you started off talking about the number of funds that you're looking, you talked about an EU fund for low-income families.
Yeah.
And how much grass is in that?
It's an interesting question because the pound has been plummeting. ERDF money's been going up quite rapidly recently. I think they do have some. You have some money hanging around. I don't know how much it is.
What is the programme called? I mean, you know it's ERDF, but that.
Yeah, you'd have to put together a bid to ERDF saying that's what you wanted to do. It's a transition fund, so it's the post objective one.
It's within South Yorkshire?
Yeah.
And there was some...
Yeah, but it's administered by Yorkshire Forward now, so it's not Yorkshire.
There's some incentives for landlords in that tax rate.
Right. I'll just add that to the list then.
Can I mention another thing as well? Sheffield City Council are currently putting out to tender their private sector stock condition survey. So that, if that includes details of the energy efficiency of the housing stock in Sheffield, that would be a really good resource.
Private sector stock condition survey. So it's a survey of how good or how knackered is all the housing in Sheffield. It's a national thing that happens, but they're going to look, obviously nowadays, they'll look at the thermal elements a lot more than they did before.
They survey a sample, I think
it's a sample, yeah.
When we say private sector, we're looking at owner occupied as well as tenanted.
Yeah, that's why it's important.
Yeah.
Can I also bring a point up about, like, when Nick talks about, you know, most of the solid wall housing, and it's nearly half, or more, it's a bit more than half in the city. But most of the things, and like when Shafak was talking this morning about the affordable one, it's more about people have got, it's sorting out them, you know, the 46% has got cavities, than doing, and really if we're going to move on this thing, then we really need to figure out how much it will cost to sort of sort out, you know, if we took, you know, what do we need to sort out the solid wall stock in Sheffield, if you're talking about green business, green new deal. Right, how much do we need to do? What is it realistic to do it year on year? How many people can we get to be employed in that? And all them sort of questions like that, to sort of sell this is how we want to move forward.
Yeah.
And not from, you know, in the sense looking around for bits of funding here and there. Because here is the problem. Andy Nolan sort of showed all them figures about how much we need to move in terms of and housing, and then, but so we've got to sort of come and get that sort of sum done, don't we? And how much it's going to cost, how much employment it has met, what sort of training skills we want to retain to LSC and City Council that we need to get people trained up in. Because there's always that leading time. But have we got enough people? If we did go into it in a big scale, is enough folk around that knows what they're doing to do it to standard what Nick's talking about here? I suggest not. You know, traditional builders are not trained to work in them techniques, perhaps, and you know, there's all that sort of stuff that all needs to be in this sort of package that we need to be saying in terms of the New Deal idea, saying this is the sort of amount of jobs in Sheffield that this would create, and it would save this much carbon, and you know, and it would sort of be a boost for the economy, because you know, it is against going to the shopping malls as Colin was talking about this morning. So we need to get them sort of sums done to be able to sort of say, not just say, well, it's a good idea to sort of sort out solid wall housing. How much it's going to cost and all that stuff is what we need to do it from a New Deal point of view, I think.
And that's why that stock condition survey is important, because I didn't go and look for the last stock condition survey to start to try and think about that, but I couldn't find it. If we went to the local studies archive, but they couldn't locate it anywhere. So if anybody can dig out the 2002 survey, that would be quite good.
Heather, can I just ask, is this the sort of thing that we could put through the Sustainable Communities Act?
These are kind of ideas we're going to be taking forward for workshop.
Yes. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, if we're going to put it to workshop, this is something I could say, you know, would be possibility to go through that whole SCA procedure, this kind of thing.
I raised this direct question at the Transition Cities Conference, the first of the presentation on the Sustainable Communities Act. And he was one of the people being involved in drafting it. And I said, what about if the community put forward a proposal to refurbish all the existing housing stocks to zero carbon standards? Would that fit in with the Sustainable Communities Act? And he was quite shocked and said, wow, well, you could try, but that sounds really radical.
Yeah.
you know, I think it sounds a bit over the top. In other words, it's quite a modest proposal.
I know it's just about time we were somewhere else, but if we're talking sort of trying to approach zero heat standards or zero carbon standards, I would much rather get more houses insulated and well airtight than bulk goodies on the top. And I love renewable energy. I love solar particularly, so I'm not trying to slag it off. But yeah, let's don't tell the architect. But you know, let's do those. Let's look at those later. Yeah. Let's actually get the envelopes sorted first.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do from here? I mean, can we get a group of people together to sort out how we're going to fix Shetland's housing stock?
The idea now, 3 o'clock, is just the kind of policy idea to take forward to the sustainable living workshop. The 3 to 4 slots are the slots to take forward some key ideas from the assessment and really work them up into policy proposals.
Right, well, thank you very much, everybody. I think that's been very positive. And thank you to our two very lively and interesting
students.
Yes.
Thank you.